Welcome to the MacGuffin Men Shorts, where we read our articles so you can focus on more important things, like beating your roommate in Madden. And now, here's Alex.
Welcome to the MacGuffin Men Shorts. I'm Alex. This is a sort of a new thing we're trying because a lot of people don't read our articles. They just sort of listen to the podcast. So we decided we might as well read our articles to those people. So yeah, it's not a dig at anybody. You know, I understand a lot of people listen to us while they're driving to work. You know, that's cool. So yeah, here is the TIFF twofer, which is two articles I, Alex, wrote about working for TIFF. Too tired not to care. I find that I learn the most when I'm either extremely awake or exceptionally exhausted. For the 3.5 minutes after finishing a strong cup of coffee, there's nothing I don't understand. When I'm towards the end of a 15-hour workday of oscillating between standing still and running around, going on 4 hours of sleep, there's nothing I do understand. I'm just sort of standing, waiting for things to end so I can run to the next shoot location, always hoping that I don't trip on anything on my way there. I'm not worried about hurting myself when I trip, as a cut on my palm or a scar on my shin can only add some Robert Shaw-esque character to my unabused skin. I'm more worried I might be too tired to stand back up. For the last 10 days, I've been working for the Toronto International Film Festival as a videographer. I'll write about this in more detail tomorrow, but today is strictly about some of the perks I got to experience while working there. And by perks, I mean movies I snuck into while I had time to kill and nobody kicked me out of them. I saw the first half of Guy Madden's new movie, the second half of a 3D Wim Wenders dance film, bits and pieces of about 10 others, and the entirety of Drive and 50-50. Since the last two are movies you've heard of, in that they star legitimate celebrities instead of Jason Patrick, those are the movies I was most interested in, and the movies I desperately didn't want to get kicked out of. I saw Drive and 50-50 in the same cinema, 2 days apart, both times with a full house. I was standing at the back of the theater, leaning against a wall while holding my camera gear, periodically shifting my weight to one foot to temporarily alleviate the pain in the other. And while this is not the ideal way to watch a movie, I loved both films, enthusiastically yelling and tweeting about each after the screenings let out. This, of course, made me think that maybe being tired and physically uncomfortable during a movie is the best way to enjoy it. The first of the two movies I saw in full was Drive, the Ryan Gosling action movie that's about a professional getaway driver, Carey Mulligan being adorable, and exploding craniums. It was grotesque, beautiful, and borderline brilliant in its own sort of way. As the movie ended, I thought to myself, this is a movie I'll watch at least once every year for the rest of my life, or at least until I turn 40. Drive, directed by comically aloof Danish auteur Nicholas Winding Refn, wasn't perfect, but it featured everything I love about cinema. The movie was atmospheric, had inventive action, glorious sound, and every frame of the movie was as pretty as its leading man's tiny blue eyes. The one problem with it was probably the writing, which was barely better than mediocre. That hardly mattered, however. If the dialogue had been entirely removed from the film, I'm certain I would have liked it almost as much as I do now. The only thing I would have really missed in that scenario would have been Albert Brooks' menacingly severe voice. A couple of days later, I saw 50-50, the cancer comedy starring Joseph Gordon-Levitt and Seth Rogen. Like the action film I saw that weekend, I really loved 50-50 the whole way through, despite it having more glaring issues than Drive. There was a stupidly unnecessary volcano metaphor, and 50-50 probably should have been about 20 minutes longer to flesh out some elements that are ignored, most specifically where the hell Philip Baker Hall goes in the third act. But like Drive, 50-50 successfully accomplished things that so many movies in its genre fail to do. Director Jonathan Levine, who did the uneven but entertaining The Whackness, and who speaks exactly like the lead character from that movie, absolutely nails the tone of 50-50, allowing it to be at times depressing, at others hilarious, and occasionally both at once. Rogan hasn't been this funny since 2007, and the rest of the cast is great as well, particularly Angelica Houston as every overbearing mother ever. At its best, 50-50 feels like everything a mixture of comedy and drama should be. There are legitimately sad and depressing moments, but there's always a tension-breaking joke on its way to release you from any sadness. And those jokes, extremely important for this type of movie, are consistently hilarious. I would be lying if I said I feel I have an objective opinion on this movie. As it ended, I was pretty confident I liked it as much as I did specifically because, like Drive, 50-50 seemed to be directly aimed at a person with my specific set of cinematic interests. My love of Drive came out of the intersection of an atmospheric, patient, independent film with the type of action movie that I love, while 50-50 spoke to the comedy drama fan in me that feels like it is the only genre in which a movie can seem truly realistic. Drive was basically a really incredible music video that left space for me to fill in the blanks with whatever I wanted to focus on, while 50-50 sucked me into a world that didn't feel all too different from my own life, except for the cancer, of course. And that is the only way a movie can make anybody who isn't overly emotional feel any sort of emotion at all. I hate to sound braggy, but each of these screenings were TIFF special presentations, meaning that the filmmakers and stars of each movie were in attendance. Both movies got the applause I felt they deserved, and 50-50 even got a standing ovation that made me think that maybe that type of movie doesn't connect only with me. But there was also the thought that maybe the film didn't necessarily connect with the audience. Perhaps the audience merely wanted to connect with the people who made the film. And that kind of worried me. The day after seeing 50-50, I was told there was an extra seat available for a screening of a movie that I was vaguely interested in. Instead of taking this seat, I opted to wait and pass the time by talking to the theater ushers outside the doors. I was simply too tired to sit down and watch a movie. But had I seen an opportunity to stand at the back for Moneyball, I probably would have taken it. When asked by a friend about why I didn't accept the invitation to sit down and watch a movie for free, I explained I was simply too tired to give the movie a fair chance. Had I sat down, I would have either fallen asleep during an action scene, or simply hated the movie. When I'm really tired, I turn into a petulant monster, simply getting pissed off when things don't go the way I expected. So to try and sit down and pay attention to a movie when I could just sleep in that same chair instead becomes a chore. Which is also kind of the reason why I'm confident Drive and 50-50 were as good as I thought. I participated in the standing ovation at the end of 50-50, and partook in my own standing ovation for Drive, but both of those were just kind of circumstances of my situation. Had nobody else in the cinema felt the need to applaud either film, I wouldn't have started the applause, but since I'm a follower, I felt I should audibly appreciate these movies along with the rest of the audience. I know there were others who wouldn't have clapped had nobody else kickstarted that train, but I hope everybody that hopped on legitimately loved the movie. I'm normally staunchly opposed to people slapping their hands together in movie theaters, but that's mostly due to the fact that the people who made the film never hear it. When those people are present, however, the problem becomes that people might clap simply because Nicholas Winding Refn will actually hear them. Writing about whether or not applause is authentic is kind of ridiculous, but it's also the key to the way most film criticism operates. A lot of movie critics, since they are so knowledgeable about film, get to write pieces about certain actors or films, pieces that require a sort of detachment from their subject to remain objective. Very often, however, these writers develop personal relationships with the actors or filmmakers they are writing about. At a retrospective look at Sony Pictures Classics' 20th anniversary, Michael Barker mentioned that Roger Ebert often has a hand in suggesting scripts that they should produce, which at least kind of invalidates Ebert's opinions of their films, while also explaining his glowing review of Barney's version. And while I have no evidence of it, to say that other reviewers like Richard Schickel and A.O. Scott don't have similar relationships would probably be a lie. I wasn't worried about my actual reviews of these movies being perceived as authentic. Like I have said approximately 3,021 times in the past, I don't care what people think about my opinions on movies. What I cared about were my actual feelings about the movies, which sounds like the same thing, but is entirely different. Watching Drive was like watching every technical element of cinema I love coming together in one sort of amalgamation of awesome. And watching 50-50 was like seeing a movie that tapped directly into the cinematic themes I find the most emotionally rewarding. Both of these experiences are incredibly rare, so when they happen, I want to be sure they're legitimate. I don't care if I like something inauthentically, but when I truly love something, I want to be sure. Perhaps standing during these movies was an important part of the experience. Ryan Gosling and Joseph Gordon-Levitt got to sit down during these screenings, but I didn't. I don't deserve a reserve seat in these cinemas because I'm not in their cinematic league. And standing throughout the films was the only reason I didn't fall asleep. I was so tired that the only way to stay awake was to pay attention to every detail of each film. It might not be the best way to watch a movie, but now I've never been more confident that I truly love these movies. At the time, I didn't understand anything. I was too tired. But now, as I finished the last of my coffee, I see it. I couldn't really form thoughts about these movies as I saw them initially. All I could do was feel what they meant to me. I wasn't thinking about Bryan Cranston being in attendance, and I wasn't thinking about whether or not I was authentically feeling like I loved these movies. I can't wait to see Drive again tomorrow, and I'll damn sure be seeing 50-50 again when it's released on the 30th. And even though I'll be more physically comfortable viewing them from a padded chair, I hope that the same initial experience still stands up. Beam me up, Biscotti. There's no way to write about any of this without sounding like I'm constantly bragging. At no point can one say, I stood 3 feet away from Robert De Niro and shot an interview with him, without sounding like a jackass. The only possible way that you can blurt out a sentence similar to this without sounding like you're trying to be cool is if somebody asks you the question, what celebrities have you stood close to and held the camera in front of? And this is a question that has never been asked of anybody, ever. But with that in mind, I'm going to brag. I have to. I recognize that all but 9 sentences in this post will read like humble brag tweets, but there's no way I can pretend to write about film without writing about the last couple weeks of my life. I recently worked as a videographer for the Toronto International Film Festival, which wrapped up on Sunday despite the fact that most people stopped caring about it last Tuesday when Hollywood stars left town. My job description read as something that seemed like a pretty cool way to get paid. Shoot some red carpet interviews, some question and answer sessions, and maybe just happen to walk by James Franco at some point. I suspect Franco's infiltration in my job description was merely another arm of his ongoing artistic genius that involves his role in General Hospital, publicly line dancing to Achy Breaky Heart, and wearing an oddly fuzzy sweater while making hilarious faces at a stiff appearance. Over the course of TIFF, I only got to see a couple of movies in whole, but I got to see the stars and filmmakers of many. The only person I was particularly excited about seeing before the festival was Jason Statham, and when I saw him walking down the red carpet to our camera, I only half-jokingly asked TIFF's interviewer if she could try to get Jason Statham to punch me in the face. I watched Jason Patrick get so bored during a Q&A session that he decided to just walk around the stage, at one point turning around to feel the fabric of the curtain behind him for what appeared to be an exceptionally long time. I walked by Adrien Grenier and realized that his eyes are a perfect representation of his mostly shitty, recently ended television show. They're pretty to look at from a distance, but he looked really vacant once he took a second to see what was going on in there. I saw Clive Owen not be allowed into a party because it was at capacity, which seemed odd. During my aforementioned interview with the guy who played Travis Bickle, he made an incredible De Niro face, which I got to capture on camera. I got to shoot a long-form interview with Tilda Swinton, which taught me that she's both an interesting person and really does look that much like David Bowie. It seemed like I walked by Roger Ebert every day of the festival. During a red carpet where the interviewer didn't know much about the actor, I got to quickly write a question for Albert Brooks and hear his answer 2 minutes later. I also made sure I got a picture of me shooting Seth Rogen on the red carpet, partially because I lack professionalism, but mostly because I think Knocked Up is one of the best movies of the past decade. Interesting people seemed to walk by me constantly, although those people were maybe only interesting to me. At one point, after seeing Brian De Palma walk down a red carpet and have nobody notice him, I looked around, dumbfounded. "This is the guy that directed Scarface," I thought, before I realized that all of his movies are terrible when you watch them past the age of 17. I made eye contact with Gus Van Sant, and I'm pretty sure he could tell how much I hated Elephant through our ocular exchange. I walked past Max Fisher's headmaster Brian Cox, and passed by a homeless Hugh Laurie every day at King and John on the way to the festival. I also may have walked past Anne Hathaway, but that seems unlikely. It was probably just another brunette with gigantic Disney eyes. I stepped off an elevator and bumped right into Harvey Weinstein, who did not punch me in the face, as I have been led to believe Harvey Weinstein does to everybody. Guillermo del Toro unexpectedly showed up at the screening of Drive that I was at, and I watched as two shocked and extremely excited fans animatedly talk to him for about 10 minutes before the screening started. This is actually one of the most adorable things I've ever seen. Del Toro was so clearly engaged in the conversation, and those guys looked like I would look if I ever got to do the same with Michael Bay. Between that and finding out Del Toro is a big fan of It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia, maybe I'll lay off on talking shit about Pan's Labyrinth for a while. I also got to watch Bryan Cranston and Albert Brooks take turns of making fun of a probably drunk Ryan Gosling for Breaker High and Young Hercules, each asking, "Now, was this before or after the Mickey Mouse Club when the shows came up?" I also heard a director say, "At one point, I didn't feel like I was making the film, but that the film was making itself." And after seeing his movie, I can confirm that he is as big of a douche as that quote makes him sound like. As anybody who has ever worked on any sort of video production knows, the majority of your time is spent waiting. TIFF was no different. I would guess that 90% of my time was spent waiting for Clive Owen to show up on the red carpet, or waiting for adorable nerds to stop talking to Guillermo del Toro and take their seats, or getting kicked out of a screening and waiting for the movie to end so you can shoot a question and answer session. Basically, I had a lot of time to kill, which I spent talking to various volunteers and employees at the venue. Everybody who wasn't freaking out over security concerns for the celebrities was extremely nice, and for some reason conversations were easy to start, despite that not being a skill I excel at. I met a bunch of interesting people, all of whom I had different, decent conversations with. I met a legitimately hilarious Irish usher named Carly, and her coworker slash graphic design student Heather. I met a musician named Robin who taught me some sort of handshake built around the hook from Nelly's 2001 single Ride With Me, and talked to her friend Dan about how present Dadaism was in the mystical soap opera Passions. This is actually one of the most interesting conversations I've had in a while, if only because Dan also told me his mom is really into hair metal. I also talked to a bunch of other unmentioned but interesting people about a variety of topics, and all of these conversations started the same way. Beyond the initial hellos, conversation would quickly turn into what work we have done through the festival. And without exception, once I started telling people that part of my job is to shoot red carpet arrivals and interviews, I got asked the same question. What celebrities have you seen? This question would lead to me listing some people, which would quickly evolve into a conversation about whichever one of these celebrities the other people liked. We started out talking about what said celebrity seemed like in person, which would then evolve into a conversation about some of their work, which would turn into me actually getting to learn something about the person standing in front of me. Basically, talking about these people was everything I loved about movies. Going into the festival, I didn't expect to be particularly starstruck. Joseph Gordon-Levitt might be the best working actor not named Don Cheadle, but he puts on his tailored vest one non-sleeve at a time just like the rest of us. I know it's not cool to be starstruck, but then it gets kind of unnatural not to be. I spent so much of my time watching these celebrities work that seeing them in a different medium, as in seeing them in something that's not really a medium at all, is kind of a pleasant shock. There's no one star that everybody is interested in, but when you and another person are a fan of the same celebrity, you have something in common. Perhaps you both really liked Half Nelson, or remember the scene in the hockey rink when Sean Hanlon first sees his name in lights. And when we see a celebrity in person, we're finally seeing them on our level. We're used to seeing them on a screen and sharing an appreciation of their work with others, but never actually being able to see them in person. We're not meeting these celebrities, they're merely walking by us. But discussing that experience is kind of the same as discussing one of their films. The desire to see celebrities in person is not just a North American phenomenon. When I was shooting red carpets for foreign films that I knew nothing about, I always found it endearing to watch members of other cultures freaking out about somebody I didn't recognize walking by. I assume it was like how a native Tanzanian would see some foreign exchange student losing their shit when Joseph Gordon-Levitt showed up to premiere Mysterious Skin at the Zanzibar International Film Festival. I often complain about the way people value celebrities, but I realize now I haven't really been looking at it both ways. Seeing the crowds of people standing together, waiting for Keira Knightley to show up, changed my opinion a little. These people were there for a glimpse at one of their favorite celebrities, but in doing so kind of proved why celebrity in film is borderline important. These people and their movies are conversation starters. When you meet somebody with a similar interest in a film or an actor, you have something in common, which can then lead to them teaching you an ironic handshake or informing you that their mom really digs Motley Crue. We learn about people through their interests, and then we learn things about them outside of their interests. Wanting to be a celebrity for no other reason than to be famous is weird, but wanting to be near a celebrity isn't really. You won't learn much about the celebrity as they walk by you on the red carpet, but seeing them might allow you to learn more about somebody else in the future. And while I'll choose to watch Taxi Driver again instead of waiting 2 hours to catch another glimpse of Robert De Niro, I don't mind that I did. Seeing De Niro kept me from being a Travis Bickle-esque loner throughout the festival, which is probably just as valuable as his actual performance.
Thanks for listening to the MacGuffin Men Short.